If you eat, sleep, and breathe golf...
Sounds like my kind of guy.
Love to explore...
All right, here's what you do. You're going to call your PR guy on the phone, tell him I'm here to see him.
And most importantly, just want to have some fun...
Looks like we got ourselves an orgy here.
Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren.
Don't you think this is starting to get just a little big for the two of us to handle?
Here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence.
I don't know how much you know about journalism, but... First rule of thumb is don't ever ask a question that you don't want an answer to.
And the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Not his fault. He's just trying not to lose his job.
Welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways. Glad you found us wherever you consume your podcasting content on Apple, Audioboom, or as always on the Golf Trip Experts website at golftripx.com. This is kind of a special bad news, good news Talking Golf Getaways today, as my pod partner, Darren, will not be joining me and Chris and our great guest and friend, Ben Grian. The good news is, obviously the bad news is that Darren's not here because we always miss Darren when he's not here, and especially the dulcet tones of Bunch. But the good news is that the reason he's not here is that as we speak, he is on a flight from California east, where he'll have a three-week road trip after a year that we all went without travel. So you can imagine that he's nervous, excited, a bit scared because Bunch is a wuss, but otherwise really, really stoked to get out on the road again. And I couldn't be happier for him. One really good thing for me, anyway, hopefully for Chris, our great producer. I'm not sure about this, Chris. You might have to let me know about this. But I'm going to get to see Darren this coming Saturday. He's going to be in South Carolina with our good friend Mark Stewart, and the three of us are going to meet up at, no, not Tobacco Road, as you might think, though I would love to. Darren will be playing Tobacco Road. But I'm going to meet them at Shiraw Country Club in South Carolina, which is an old Donald Ross course that I've been dying to play. So Bunch and I will have our hickories. We'll have our great friend Mark Stewart alongside. And I get to see Darren Saturday. And then next week, I get on a plane a week from this coming Friday. Of course, I don't know when you'll be hearing this pod, hopefully in a couple of days. But on May 7th, I'll be getting on a plane and going out to Kentucky, Lexington, Kentucky. I'll see my brother Matt for a couple of days. And then he and I are going to be going up to the fabulous French Lick Resort for our long-awaited golf listeners trip with Ryan Ballingy and Brian Orr and Darren and me and Matt and a whole bunch of people. Chris McEwen. Yeah, baby. That's the news I've been waiting for. Cool. That's great. Did you just find out about that? You're clear to go?
Yeah, I mean, it was touch and go. It's still a little touch and go, but as of right now, I will be there.
Cool. What do I have to touch for you to be able to go?
My dog.
Keep it clean.
My dog needs to get it together, man. So he's had some issues, and I do not want to leave my wife with him.
Yeah,
unless I'm sure he's gonna be okay.
Okay. Well,
but he's doing amazing right now, so that's why I'm pretty optimistic about making the trip.
Okay, so we still got a week or so before we finalize that, but that's great news. I'm thrilled you're going to be there. I mentioned that Ben Grian is our guest. You and I, Chris, have never met in person, though we have spent now hours of time together. I'm going to get to this with Ben because this is one of the great things. We've all met up through social media. So the fact that I already know and have seen and have played golf with Ben Grian. So that byproduct is already a success, but the chance to actually hang with you for a few days has me, well, I'll just say I'm happy that it's going to happen because I don't want people to think I'm really weird.
It's been a long time coming. It's far overdue and I can't wait.
Yeah.
Cannot
great.
Wait.
That is great news. So thanks for that. So Darren is on the way. As a reminder, where you can find us on the socials, just in case, Darren at Golf Getaways on Twitter and Instagram. You can keep up with him as he goes. He's going to be posting a lot of stuff on his account and on Golf Trip Experts because he is going on some major road journeys in 3 weeks' time. Me at Mitch Lawrence, L-A-U-R-A-N-C-E on Twitter and Instagram. Chris McEwen, who you've already heard from, the great Chris McEwen, at Chris McEwen, McEwen on Twitter and Instagram. And of course, do not forget his great podcast as well, Golf Origin Stories. You will absolutely love it if you haven't heard it yet. Shame on you if you haven't. All right, let's dive straight into our guest, good friend Ben Grian, as I said. Little background, Ben's a U.S. Army veteran who fell in love with the game of golf in Charlottesville, Virginia. We'll talk about that back in 2010. He's since played over 160 courses across the U.S., currently resides in Nashua, New Hampshire. Thanks for the pronunciation, Ben, that you sent me as if I had no idea how
listen,
to pronounce
Nashua.
That made me laugh hard.
Yeah, you're welcome. Laugh you hard. Know, I have to pronounce my last name for everybody, so I figured I might as well pronounce the city.
Well, Grian, I could see Gran or Grian, but how does somebody pronounce Nashua other than Nashua?
I don't know. It's you
okay.
Know.
All right, then we'll let it go.
All right,
I love.
We can edit that out.
It's a sign of who you are, which I love. You are ever helpful.
It's also a sign that I deliberated over whether or not to include the pronunciation for about 3.5 minutes.
There you go.
So, yeah, that's
there you go. That is who you are. All right. In addition to being that fastidious with his information, he is a top 10 local advisor for Golf Advisor. He knows a ton about golf in Virginia. Over 60 courses played in that state. He's a former host of Golf Chat, hashtag Golf Chat, a weekly, if you don't know this, and I can't believe you wouldn't, a weekly golf discussion group on Twitter, which you can find at Real Golf Chat. We're going to talk about that. You can follow Ben on both Twitter and Instagram at Back9Ben, which is such a great handle. I've always loved that handle. It's so optimistic.
Wait till I tell you about my back nine today.
Oh, that's good. And Chris will jump in because Chris had a great back nine the other day.
Oh, good.
Didn't you? You went 50-40, did you not, Chris?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite the swing. Yeah,
which is great. We've all had that, and we all do that. So anyway, Ben, we're thrilled that you're here. This has been a little while coming, but I'm really happy you could join us today.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. Great to talk to you guys, as always.
Cool. First, you mentioned this morning, most importantly, you were off really early, first on the tee at Lochmere Golf in Tilton, New Hampshire, at the foot of the White Mountains. And it looked just that shot of an empty parking lot, clubhouse, the foot of the White Mountains. It looked like if you were going to be there by yourself first off of the day, it sounds pretty close to heaven to me.
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, as someone that does over 90% of my rounds kind of on my own, and the fact that with the COVID boom that we've seen in the golf industry, you don't get empty golf courses anymore. So I really, really enjoyed being able to go out there and just focus on my game and enjoy the serenity of the course.
You said that it might be the quietest round of golf you're going to have for a long time.
Yeah.
Was it that? It seems like it would be exactly that.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, I playing at my own pace, and the only thing to hear were the birds chirping. The New Hampshire spring in full swing now.
So no music. You're not a music guy.
I am a music person. I tend to carry my headphones with me and listen to music. You know, I kind of go back and forth, but I had forgotten my headphones this time. And since the course was so empty, I thought, well, why not listen to the sounds of nature?
Cool.
So
good answer. Good response. Gold star.
Thanks.
No, it's a cool opportunity. I mean, it really is. And most of us don't get a chance. I tend to play most of my solo rounds late in the afternoon and walk. And so I always feel grateful when I'm able to do it. And there really isn't anybody out there. I also love that feeling you said on your post, which is where I saw it. And we're going to get to that in a second. But you said that the only instructions they gave you were not to play too fast.
Yes.
Because you were going to catch up with the maintenance crew. And there's something you don't hear every day on a golf course.
Literally the first time I'd ever heard it, because they were like, you know, I show up and I said, where's all the golfers? And they said, well, they all canceled. I'm like, well, I'm here. And they're like, well, that's a problem. I said, well, what? They said, well, we can't send off anything except threesomes and foursomes until 9 a.m. So if you're here by yourself, and they said, you know, it was, I forget her name, but she was one of the most lovely people I've ever met in my life. 5 minutes with her is this little old lady that was running the golf shop. The nicest person, God ever created. And, she, you know, she's like, that's fine. You can go just, you know, just take your time. We just don't want you to get, you know, in the way of the maintenance crew. And as someone that's gotten in the way of the maintenance crew, before, because I tee off early sometimes and I'm by myself and I play at a 2.5 hour pace. I was like, hey, I totally get it. So I took my time and it was great. It was fantastic.
Cool. Did you bump into any maintenance people?
Not really. I think on 9, there was one guy mowing around the greens, but he was pretty much done by the time I finally made it to the green.
I'm in such awe of the maintenance people out on the golf course whenever I find them. And I always get upset when I'm playing with people I don't know and there'll be somebody doing something on a mower or whatever. And they have, you know, they look at it and kind of, hey, move over, do whatever. And I always go, excuse me. Sorry, but you do understand that the reason you like playing this much is because of these guys, right?
I huge respect for maintenance crew, especially because I love a course with really good conditions, and you only get those conditions with a great greenskeeper and a really good crew. So
All right, shout out to them. I knew about the round this morning, as I said, because of your post on Twitter. You and I met online through the Golf Chat connection, as many of us have. And because of that initial connection, we've gotten, as I said, to play golf together, which is an absolute treat and was. The fact that it happened to be at Tobacco Road, Caledonia, True Blue, you know, three fairly Gamble decent Sands. Places. Gamble Sands, you know, that is a bonus because I'd settle for so many people that I don't know if I was just playing on a 9-hole par 3 course with them, but we've gotten to experience so much because of social media. So I want to start there. Let's talk about Golf Chat just for a second. It was started just for, again, for people who don't know, the visionary, that's the only way I can call it, Zeb Wellborn of Wellborn Media out in California, about, I think, if I'm not mistaken, about 5 years ago.
Sounds about right.
And you can find Zeb if you haven't at Zeb Wellborn. You on Twitter, you took over as host after Zeb.
And that's right.
And now you've passed it on to Jay Wallace at Walla J, W A L L A J, who's doing a great job. From humble beginnings, Golf Chat now is over 4,000 devoted, really devoted weekly followers every Tuesday night. That's the first run. People can pick it up later if they want to answer questions. They participate. It's called the fastest hour in golf. I have to agree. There's questions submitted by the hosts, by followers. The replies flow so furiously that when I first started participating, I literally couldn't understand what I had to do because there were so many replies I wanted to send. The information that flies back and forth is great. Suggestions, all kinds of golf related topics, truly thoroughly great. I know so many people who are indebted to Golf Chat for what opportunities they've given us, you included, because I'm talking to you, which we wouldn't be if that hadn't existed. Tell us about your experience with Golf Chat, what it's meant to you and your journey.
Yeah, I mean, it was, one of the greatest opportunities that I've had really in my life, you know, especially because golf is such a passion for me. And, you know, Zeb came to me after I had started participating for a few months, and just really loved, the conversations and the questions. And I was, it just had a lot of enthusiasm for joining in each week and sharing with others that hadn't heard of Golf Chat. And Zeb came to me and said, hey, you've been a great ambassador of this. And, it's time for me to move on. And I've been looking for somebody to sort of pass the torch to, and thought you'd be a great, great host. And I was floored. I said, yes, would love to. So, took a month or two to really get into a good groove with it, to really kind of see where I wanted to go with it. And even then it took even a while longer to kind of find my own voice, with Golf Chat as the host. But had the job for about 2.5 years and just really enjoyed every week. I mean, it was such a great opportunity to connect with people that I never would have connected with before. As you said, to meet with people, it opened up opportunities for me to play courses and have experiences that I wouldn't have had without that. So it's just been fantastic.
Yeah, and you were great at it. You know, that's the thing that I love, the fact that Zeb did what he did at the beginning and put so much into it to create it and get it started. But then when you took it over, as you said, it might have taken a little bit, but you had your own voice in it. Jay is now having his own voice in it in terms mm-hmm. of the way stuff is presented and how things go. Mm-hmm. And it's a fabulous thing to watch and to see new people come into the family, you know, and really yes. get into it. And it's a great thing. I am obviously all in favor. And so I'm happy to talk about that too and turn people onto it if they haven't gotten involved on Tuesday nights. Let us for a brief second, because I think this is part of this social media story that you and I love and talk about a lot.
Yeah.
There are so many positives to it. The ones yeah. we've talked about, so many more. You look at this, what Ryan French has done with Monday Q Info on Twitter mm-hmm. and the explosion of stuff that he has done.
Yeah.
All of it great. I mean, it's mind blowing. And again, if you haven't gone to @MondayQInfo on Twitter, get there. But all the stories about that he started about the developmental tour and the players and the stories of these people, both men and women, trying to get to the next level, whether it's a mini tour or the Korn Ferry tour or the, you know, LPGA events to qualify for events or the big tour, they're fantastic. And what Ryan has done is off the charts. Everybody, I'm sure by now, you and I know Chris too, probably has seen all the stuff about Michael Vasacki getting into the Valspar this week and how it took off. And there's now like 1,500,000 views of the video that happened because of social media. We would never have heard, if it weren't for Ryan French, we would never have heard about a guy like Michael Vasacki and seen his reaction to draining a 20-foot putt to make the Valspar on the PGA Tour. And the stuff is great. I think we all agree on that.
Absolutely.
Okay, here's the other side, which I want to talk to you about, and I know you're anxious to talk about, which I think is one of the coolest things that I saw unfold in front of my eyes. it didn't start off that way, but the potential for kind of misunderstanding on social media, some awkward conversations if we're not careful. And I know you, Ben. I know who you are, and I know what you mean when you do things. You started doing live Twitter feeds a while ago, and I was always thrilled because I can't do them. Yes. I mean, I could technically do them, but I don't because it takes away from the game while you're playing.
Yes.
You have to be super focused.
Yeah.
You have to be a storyteller. There's a lot that goes into it. It's not just pushing a button and going, okay, I'm live on Twitter. You have to really care about it. But you recently did one while you were at a course in New Hampshire called Shattuck Golf Club mm-hmm. that had some unintended consequences while you shared your thoughts on the courses that, you know, this was one that we travel to. We play a lot at other places. I want to talk about it, A, to give you some props for the way you handled it, and B, because I think it might teach some listeners a thing or two about the desire to go viral, you know,
and
how to pay attention. So kind of walk us through it, if you would. I think it's great.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, every now and then I'll do a live tweeting session. And as you said, it's not the easiest thing to do. It takes a special disregard for your game to do because
I love putting it that way.
Yeah. It takes a lot of focus off of, you know, actually playing golf. So but the reason I was doing it for this round is I've played the Shattuck a few times. It is a very difficult course. Anyone will tell you that. The slope rating on it, I think, is in the 140s up to 150. I think if you play it from the tips, it's incredibly difficult. It's very narrow fairways. And even if you land a shot in the fairway, there's a lot of undulation, a lot of granite boulders, which are signature of New Hampshire courses that can sometimes ricochet shots offline. So it's a course that can be very frustrating. And, you know, one goal that I've, my main primary goal that I've had this year with my golf is to just have fun with every round. Regardless of who I'm with, regardless of the conditions, the weather conditions, the course conditions, what have you. I just want to go out and I want to finish around and come back to my car and say, that was fun for whatever reason. And so I felt that doing a live tweeting of a course that I didn't particularly like would make it more fun. And so I step up to the first tee looking for something to kind of kickstart the live tweeting as I do. And I see this kind of random makeshift sign that says no practice swings on tees. And I was just like, that's a weird sign. I don't really know what that means or why it's there. And so I tweeted about it. And, you know, I was going for a new, not new to me, but new to the live tweeting. I was going for a new style where I was kind of being snarky and sarcastic. And mainly because the people that follow my live tweetings, like yourself, Mitch, know that I have a sense of humor that can get kind of dry at times. And so I started off with this tweet, and I was being kind of snarky about it and everything. And off I went and, you know, was providing updates on Twitter and on Instagram. I was actually trying to really multitask by adding stories to Instagram at the same time. And, not really focusing on the replies or the notifications I was getting, because I was also trying to play golf. And about 7 or 8 holes in, I realized that something on Twitter had happened because I was getting a lot of traffic on Twitter. And I was just like, okay, all right, well, that's good. That has to be good, right? That has to be good. So I kept going. Long story short, finished the round. Drove back to with 3% battery, by the way, on my phone, because I spent so much time trying to upload photos and videos. Went back to my parents' house to kind of go through all the comments and everything, and realized that all hell had broken loose. So the photo that I had used with that weird sign had gotten snagged by golf.com on Instagram. And posted there, where there were already 200 something comments on, you know, what do we think of this local rule policy? And, you know, it kind of got out of control from there. And I mean, at the time that afternoon, I was like, this is fantastic. I've gone viral. It's finally happened. You know, monetary, means of, you know, supporting myself through social media is here at last. This is going to be great. And then within about 12 hours, I realized this might not have been the best thing ever, because unfortunately, a lot of those comments on the sign and on the course itself were very negative, as Twitter and social media can be. It kind of brought out all the trolls. Mm-hmm. And there was a moment where I started to think, because again, the Shattuck is in Jaffrey, New Hampshire. It's in the middle of nowhere. There's no Twitter handle for the Shattuck. At least there wasn't at that time. I don't know if maybe they started one now to monitor things. But I was like, this might've gotten back to somebody at the Shattuck by now. This could be a problem. And sure enough, the owner of the Shattuck chimed in early the next morning, and clearly and very rightfully not too happy with how things had unfolded. And again, to kind of wrap up, I ended up writing a story for Ryan Ballengy, as you mentioned, on Golf News Net, and about the whole experience. And, you know, I contacted the manager on email and kind of explained what had happened. And again, definitely did not intend for that to go the way that it did. And it is a cautionary tale that when you post something online, no matter how many times you have posted similar things, you never quite know how it's going to go. And you know, it's just best to be careful. And to, if you're going to be snarky and sarcastic on Twitter, it's probably best to preface it ahead of time. So in case it just, you know, it reaches a wider audience than you were expecting, they know what's up.
Yeah. And the thing about it is that when I saw the first one with the sign, and I think that's what everybody reacted to.
Yes.
If it had just been the sign with no commentary, snarky or otherwise, by you, I think all of us went, what are you even talking about?
Yeah.
The sign made no sense and makes no sense, frankly.
Yeah.
But once it gets picked up, like you said, on Instagram by golf.com, then you're in a whole different world because it's all people you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, people see it because of that, and they don't know your sense of humor, your tongue-in-cheek qualities, all that stuff. But what I did, and I want to end this little part of it by saying, you brushed by what you wrote for Golf News Net and Ryan, but when I took the time to read it, it blew me away because it's really rare on any social media platform, I think, for people to address a situation A, quickly, which you did, and B, with kind of the thoughtfulness and the care of what you were saying and how things unfolded. You literally the timeline of that whole cautionary tale you just told in a really fantastic way, and giving props to the course and the new owners and, you know, making people aware of certain, I really, really thought it was a great thing to do. So I want to give you props to that. And a lot of people would have just said, hey, get over it. I didn't like the place.
Well, no,
you know, I mean, people have a way of dealing now on social media. This is what kills me.
Yeah.
Because everything is so fast and hurried. You're on to the next thing and you didn't do that. And I thought that was great.
Yeah. And thank you. I really appreciate those kind words. And the course, the manager that I contacted, thanked me for reaching out, which was nice. And we had a good, email conversation there. Our good friend, Eric Hart, gave me a great idea for the format for that story. Cause he suggested the title of 24 Hours at Shattuck, which made me immediately think of Bill Simmons's running diaries that he used to do. And I kind of used that format to tell the story because it did all happen so fast and so frantically that it was, you know, most of that time was just me trying to catch up to what the reality of where we were in the story, and how to respond to it in a timely way, because as futile as it can be to try to correct a narrative that Twitter has already decided what it's going to do with, it's still best to try to do that and to do it as quickly as possible.
Right. And great that Eric did that. He's obviously very dear to us. And so that's nice. I wasn't aware of that part, but it's great to hear that Eric took part in it also. This is a good way. This is a good thing of people coming together to go, okay, how do we address something? All right, let's move away. I will someday try to get to Shattuck with you and we will have fun.
Yes. I mean,
no matter what, we're going to have fun, and hopefully we can have a chance to get on there and go, hey, this is a great place.
Yeah. And again, like, that's another great thing that's come out of the story is, even in that initial tweet thread, a lot of people that were chiming in saying, hey, I want to go play this if it's really that hard.
Right.
You know? So there's always a flip side to things. So.
Cool. All right. Let's move on from a course that had some controversy to some courses and talk golf that to me has there's no controversy about this, although there may be for some people, but not you and I.
No.
I want to talk just briefly about Tobacco Road, Caledonia, and True Blue. You mentioned, and I mentioned, that we also played Gamble Sands together out in Washington. David McClay Kidd's fantastic course. Hopefully we're going to be going back in August for a big trip. Maybe you can join us because we're going to get to play Quicksands and everything else. But I know.
Sounds awesome.
And I'm going to rent a Dodge Charger souped up.
Yes.
In your honor.
Yes.
But relative to Tobacco Road and Caledonia and True Blue, I just want to talk for a second about, I'm lucky because I live near to all three of them. Caledonia, True Blue, my favorites, have been since they were built. And I was here when they were built. Tobacco Road, our love for it is obvious. Your thoughts on the impact of communing with the spirit of Mike Strand?
Tobacco Road was my introduction to Mike Strand and his artistry and creativity with the golf course. I didn't know the first thing about golf course architecture before I played there. still know next to nothing, but it's Tobacco Road is a special place because it gives you such a unique sensation playing there, and the design of the course and the way that you play the course is such a special way of doing it, of playing the game. And you know, he took inspiration from the Irish link style courses, and I haven't been to Ireland yet, but it's on my list, and you get such a sense of that, and it's just awesome. It's a truly one of a kind of course.
So then you go to Caledonia and True Blue.
Yeah.
Because Tobacco Road was toward the end of Mike Strand's evolution.
Yeah.
But then you get Caledonia, which was his first solo design. And then you get True Blue, which followed a couple of years later. Similar styles, different kind of golf course. Not only did we get to play on Finn scooters, which you and I, you know, I'm thinking of changing my middle name to Finn.
so good.
But we got to experience that. But how did that, now you're getting kind of deeper into Mike Strand's by seeing Caledonia and True Blue. And I'm just interested because anybody who's played as many golf courses as you have in a relatively short amount of time, 11 years is what you've been playing, and you've crammed a ton of playing in that. And I'm just always interested when somebody comes upon Mike Strand's, how it, really what it does to them in terms of appreciation of the game.
Yeah. It's hard for me to put it in words. I'm not an academic kind of person when it comes to golf courses design and such, but the way that he lays things out, and the way that you stand on the tee and you look out, and I know I've said to you many times, as we're standing there on the tee, and I look at you and I go, Mitch, there's nowhere to hit the ball. Where do I go? I don't know where to go. And then you walk up and you're just like, how did I ever think that this shot was intimidating? I mean, there's so much space, there's so much room to land your ball and to set you up perfectly for the next shot, but you just don't see it from the tee. And I get that some people don't like that, because it incorporates a lot of blind shots or, there's some deception there. But once you've gone around the course, all you want to do is just go right back to the first tee, because then you start to see the magic and the strategy. And it's great. And to your point with Caledonia and True Blue, it's such a great contrast. And, I'm going to be playing it next month. We'll talk about that. But such the contrast between the two, where you have Caledonia, which is small and intimate, and True Blue, which is bigger and brash, and is just, it's such a great 1-2 combo. I can't think of many other courses that are, right there across the street from each other that are designed by the same person and yet so unique and different.
Great recap of it. Obviously, it's the way I feel every time I go, and I've been tons.
Yeah.
All right, you brought it up and I was about to, so let's use that as a beautiful segue, a very smooth flowing segue to the Griever Cup. Before we get to Griever Cup 3,
okay,
which is what you were talking about in a few weeks, I want to go back because I think there's people obviously who don't know about Griever Cup and what it is and how it came to be. So there have been two already. I know about them, but just tell us a little bit about the history of the Griever Cup and how we get to Griever Cup 3, which is taking place here in Myrtle Beach.
Yeah. So Griever Cup was started by me and my good friend Jake Weaver. So that's how you get the name Green and Weaver together. And we met through Twitter. So going back again to all the people that you meet through social media, and Jake and I had become pretty good friends before we actually met and played a round of golf in Virginia a couple of years ago. But after that round, we started talking more about, because I was sharing my love of Tobacco Road with him, and he had his reservations about how good it could possibly be. So I said, well, you need to come back and to the East Coast here, because he lives out in Iowa. And I said, you need to come back and play it. And he says, well, I need a little bit more reason than to just go and play around with you, because I just did that. And I said, okay, well, what if we just invite a whole bunch of people from Twitter to do it too? He said, that's a good reason. So we had 9 people, including a lot of people that we had never met on Twitter, all come down to Tobacco Road, and we played 4 rounds on Tobacco Road. Again, a course that you can play it so many times, and each time it's a new experience. So we did 4 rounds there, and then we did a 5th round at Dormy Club, which was still accessible at the time, which was fantastic. Again, another great compliment, because it's a very different course. And we had such a blast, and we said, well, now we got to do this every year. So that's what we've done now. And now this is year 3, and, we're on to Griever Cup 3 in, Caledonia and True Blue next month. And there's 20 of us now. So it's grown. It's been awesome.
You're invading. There's no other way to put it. What I love about the idea and anybody's trip, for any of us, the great thing is that usually you get to play a number of rounds, whether it's one course or a couple of courses. But the beauty of something like Tobacco Road, especially for somebody who's never played it, is the first round stuns you. Yeah. You just don't know what to make of it. I remember the first time I played it, and I kind of went, what is this?
Yeah,
I didn't know if I liked it or didn't like, whatever. And every successive time that I played it, I fell more in love with it. So the chance to play 4 rounds there, did Jake come around by the end of the 4th round? I know he did. I know
he did. Yeah. Yeah. And as you said, like after the first round, I asked him, and he said, it's good. He's like, I think I want another shot at it before I give a full opinion. And then after the 2nd round, he's like, okay, I like it. And after the 4th round, he's like, okay, I love it. So yeah, the more you play it, the more you love it.
Definitely. All right, cool. And the fact that it's going to be here in Myrtle Beach down on the south end, you've got Caledonia, True Blue. You're also playing the Dunes Club. Yeah,
that's right. Yep.
Yeah. And have you played the Dunes Club before?
I have not. No.
Oh, you're in for it. It's another, when you talk about going to Dormy Club after going to Tobacco Road, you're going to, Dunes Club is off the charts and very different than Mike Strand's. Robert Trent Jones, incredible history when you walk through the clubhouse. I mean, between the Senior Tour Championship used to be there and so many events, and one of the great staffs in all of golf, Dennis Nickel, the director of golf at the Dunes Club, when you meet him, and I'll make sure you meet him, he and the staff are just off the charts. Fantastic. You're going to love it. So I'm not playing with you guys because I'll be just back from French Lick, but I got to say, I live here and I'm jealous.
Well,
I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun because Griever Cup is, you know, as the name implies, there is a level of competition. There is a cup that you win at the end, a trophy, but it's mostly about the people that you play with and the fact that you're making new friends over the course of 2.5 days. And it's just fantastic. So
cool.
I cannot wait.
Yeah, none of us can wait. All of Myrtle Beach is anticipating this. I've seen signs on the highway saying Griever Cup 3.
Come. Yes. Yeah.
They've already started blocking off parking lots.
Yeah, so as they should. As they should.
Well, the paparazzi are going to be, you know, after the pandemic, they're looking to get anybody they can, and you guys are it. I'm just giving you warning. Since we're talking about social media, I already told you can find Ben Green at @back9ben. And if you go to Twitter, you want to get on Jake Weaver's also because it's really great. Jake.
Yes.
He's another guy. I can't wait to beat him. So his handle is @golfer_Jake_78, because obviously that's what he shoots every time he plays. okay, let's move on a little bit just quickly because this struck me while I was talking to you. Before we get to kind of New Hampshire and the area you're in now, I want to, and I know Chris, you still there? Chris, you still there?
I am, yeah.
You playing with your dog or are you listening?
No, I just couldn't find the unmute button on this.
Oh, okay, good. Well, I'm glad you found it. As I mentioned before, Chris's great golf origin stories. This is the kind of thing he gets into, but this is my show and Darren's show, so I'm going to get into Ben's golf origin story. I know that you want to hear it too, Chris, so I was making sure you're alert and aware.
It's true. I'm pretty aware of it. So Ben, God bless him. He was just like you who,
he
volunteered in the early days when I had no idea what I was doing to come on my show and talk to me.
Do you know what you're doing now, Chris? No,
I couldn't find the mute button. I couldn't find the mute button.
Ooh, jab. All right, then. All right. Go back to sleep. Play with the dog. I want our listeners to hear what Ben's golf origin story is. So Ben, you said 2010s when you really took it up.
Yeah, so
give us a little background.
My exposure to golf in general was when I was deployed. I was in the U.S. Army for 9 years. I had two deployments. The first deployment was to Kuwait, where I was only there for 3 months, and I hung around the recreation tent and played a bunch of video games and ping pong and surfed the web. I mean, it was not too bad other than being in the middle of the desert. But people were playing Tiger Woods PGA Tour on the PlayStation there. And I was like, oh, that looks like fun. And then the second deployment, I was stationed in Baghdad. This is a little bit more serious. But they had a makeshift driving range at Saddam Hussein's old palace up in the balcony. So you could just hit golf balls out into his fish pond. So started doing that. And when I came back to the States and moved to Charlottesville, I just needed an excuse to get outdoors, because Charlottesville, for those who haven't been to that city, it's absolutely gorgeous, especially this time of year. It is just a place you want to be outdoors as much as possible. And so I needed an excuse to do that. And I said, I'm going to finally take up this game of golf, and took a few lessons and was absolutely hooked from there on out.
Have to admit, because I had heard it before, but the Baghdad Saddam Hussein balcony shots has to be, call me crazy, Chris, one of the great golf origin stories ever.
It's, yeah.
I mean, not just only off that,
wasn't there an SI spread on that, Ben?
Not to my knowledge.
I remember reading a story after you had told me that. No, my brother sent it to me, because my brother worked with a guy who he was deployed and did the same thing, and he had sent me. So it was written about somewhere where you could go, and there were a bunch of pictures. I know you sent me a picture of it. But yeah, there was like an actual, like, someone wrote a story about it.
So, Chris, what you're telling me is another sports publication ripped off something else that I posted and made it go viral again.
That's yes. right.
Fantastic. That's awesome. Right.
And I think you should go back and deal with them on it, Ben.
Yeah, I really should. Where's my royalties?
Yeah. No, but I just, you know, Chris, we're obviously, all of us talk to people and say, how'd you start? Where'd you get started?
Yeah.
And most people say, I played with my dad, my grandfather. I don't know. I was in college. Went to hit some balls at the driving range, but Ben said,
right.
Yeah.
And the obvious question to me was when he told me that, and I had no idea. I didn't know that when he told me was well, where did the golf balls come from? And they would just ask their family to send them golf balls. Right. So they would just get them in the mail and then hit them in the pond.
Yeah.
I love the whole thing. I do. It shows that the dedication that you have for the game now came from a really great place.
Yeah.
Because if you can hit off a balcony at Saddam Hussein's palace into a fish pond, then there can't be any place else that's weird to you. There can't.
Yeah. But I mean, again, it's all about finding ways to have fun, even in places that are not fun.
Yes. So. I would say that's probably true. All right. Let's move on to New Hampshire. What's your experience? As I said, you've played over 60 golf courses in Virginia. You know, as a golf advisor and somebody people go to when they're trying to figure out where do I go play, what courses are like. How is the New Hampshire fitting into this part of the puzzle for you now? Are you familiar with a lot of courses in New Hampshire, or are you on a learning curve the same way we all are?
Yeah, definitely on a learning curve. So I didn't start playing golf until after I'm from New Hampshire originally. I should point right. that out. So I born and raised in New Hampshire 21 years, then moved to Virginia. So I didn't start playing golf until I moved to Virginia. So prior to moving back last year, which was not for golf reasons, I can assure you, as I was greeted with snow within 2 months of me getting here. I haven't played that many courses before moving up here. So I am very much in a learning process right now and sort of transitioning from being an expert of all things Virginia public golf courses to those up here in New England. Of course, New Hampshire being a small state, it's kind of, you know, I'm doing as much golfing outside the state as I am inside, just because there's a ton of courses in New England that I wanted to play. But yeah, it's a very different type of golf. There's not all the splashy public courses that you get in the Southeast or out West. Not a lot of easily recognizable names of the golf courses, but there's still some fantastic hidden gems out here. And, you know, you get some really good turf conditions, especially it's a little bit drier up here. I guess they've been having a drought the last few years. So conditions are a lot more firm, which I much prefer. I'm so glad to be away from the soupy and sogginess that I experienced a lot of the time in Virginia. But right. I like the bent grass fairways and rough up here is more to my liking. And then you get, like, as I mentioned earlier with the Shattuck, we are the granite state here in New Hampshire. So there's rocks and boulders kind of just everywhere. So it gives it a unique look. There's more undulation in the fairways. You don't get those big, smooth, kind of flat fairways that you get in other places. It's a little tighter, generally speaking, and in a lot of undulation. And just a lot of times because some of the courses here are very old. So you get that classic construction and architecture to them, which is really nice.
So this seems to me to be such a great place. I mean, to do what you're doing, which is to have the spirit of adventure and love of golf that you do, to be able to get out and experience new places and write about them in a way that people who want to read about them would be interested in, because a lot of them will be doing the same thing you're doing, which is experiencing places for the first time.
Yeah, absolutely. I love playing new courses. And obviously because I've played so many, and just taking in the experience that each course gives you, that each designer gives you, and kind of learning, you know, I'm probably not as good of a golfer as I could be, just because I play so many different courses that ask so many different things of you as a golfer. So, and I'm perfectly fine with that, because it allows me to experience such great golf. And it's been a really awesome journey so far over these last 11 years.
So are you going to be posting, are you going to be writing for Golf Advisor, doing those kind of reviews too?
Yeah, absolutely. So,
okay, cool. I just want to make sure that people know where they can, you know, they'll be able to find this, because I know a lot of people up in New England.
Yeah. I mean, and I've got a few in the pipeline right now. I'll be writing a review of Lochmere today, which is again, one of the top public courses here in New Hampshire. And it was $50 to walk 18 this morning. So, I mean, it's a great value too. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, people will be interested in that for sure. You know, I went, just as a side note, you're talking about boulders and things, and I went up to Glade Springs in West Virginia.
Yes.
Which blew me away. Two of the courses blew me away. The third one, we'll leave that off, but two of them really blew me away. And the Cobb course, which I knew I would like because I'm a history guy, George yep. Cobb, but Stonehaven at Glade Springs is one of those places where there are a lot of the rock component, the element of rocks around the golf course was stunning. I mean, really beautifully used. And I'm a big fan of anything really natural being there.
Yes.
It just connects you so much. I'm not a fan of a whole bunch of big boulders in the middle of fairways that throw your golf ball, you know, 60 yards offline.
Right.
I'm not saying that. but I think it would be great. I'm really looking forward to your Golf Advisor stuff on New Hampshire. Because yeah. I went to school in New England. I went to school in Boston, man. It'd
yeah.
be great to get back up there and play some golf.
yeah, I'm really excited for all the new courses I'm going to be playing this year up here.
Cool. All right. Are you ready for our emergency nine? We've covered a lot of subjects.
As ready as I'll ever be.
Okay. Well, that's all I can ask of you. So as always, the emergency nine, this will be quick hitting, and we'll get to some interesting questions and rifle our way through it. So here we go.
All right.
Your favorite course and or destination anywhere in the world?
So I haven't really traveled outside the U.S.
And don't say the balcony at Saddam Hussein.
So for golf, I haven't really traveled outside the U.S. for golf. So okay. It's still my favorite course is still Tobacco Road. But I will say that I'll save it for the next question. But yeah, Tobacco Road is still my favorite. Gamble Sands a close second.
Okay. And I completely understand why. All right. So we've heard about those. We know why you like them. That's cool. All right. What destination is at the top of your golf travel bucket list?
That would be Ireland/Scotland/England. I really can't decide between those. I'll probably hit them all up at once. But that has been at the top of my bucket list for several years now. I don't know if I'll get to it this year, but definitely by next year.
Obviously that encompasses so much.
Yes.
Are you saying to yourself, I have to get to St. Andrews first, or are you just going to kind of see how it comes up and decide where you want to try?
I don't think I can find a bad course over there to play. So it's more right. about just going and having the experience. Because I think if I concern myself too much with the specific courses and put too much pressure on me, then if the weather's not good at one versus the other, then I might feel disappointed. But I think I probably have a slight favoritism for the Irish courses, again, just because Tobacco Road was based on them. So places like Trolley and Royal County Down and the Million of
Ballybunion.
Ballybunion. Yeah. Definitely. Those are top of my list.
But you're so wise for a 35-year-old, Ben. You are. I said that kind of kiddingly, but, you know, so we get, and it's obvious, we don't get to go all the time. You know, yeah. These trips for us as Americans to go over and play. But it's such a great thing to mention the experience of going as opposed to other than a few specific courses, because for somebody, and I don't know about Chris, how you feel. Have you been to Scotland, Ireland, England, Chris?
Nope. I have not.
So you and Ben are clearly going together.
I'm in.
Okay.
Let's do it.
But the great thing that I've realized, because I've been to all of them, luckily, over the course of my life, and the great thing I realized is that, yes, it's the big courses, obviously, you want to play, but the experience of being and just going to the local course there and being in the towns wherever you are, that's literally what you take away. That's what you carry home in your heart. It's why, to me, you hear people talk about whenever they go, and wherever they go, they come back and talk about the people, the pubs, the town. You know, they mention the courses, but, you know, it's more kind of part of it. So I'm excited for you to go. I really am. I love hearing that people haven't been and they're going to get to experience it. Yeah. All right. That was kind of my rant on going in the UK. All right. The best place you have ever stayed?
Boy, Gamble Sands is up there. The rooms that we had there that overlooked mm-hmm. the wild putting green and that gorgeous view that you woke up to. Gosh, if you haven't been to Gamble Sands, you've got to put it on your list because it is unbelievable. But I've also been to Vegas, so I think that was a great destination as well. Got to stay in the Mandalay Bay mm-hmm. hotel, and that was pretty nice too. So.
Cool. It's always a fun, and there's so much, obviously, there's such great golf there too. It's
yes.
Silly.
Yes.
All right. Moving on. The single best thing you've ever eaten on it. I always, Bunch put this question in because as you and I know, Chris, and Ben does too, because he was Gamble Sands. This is so Bunch. The single best thing you've ever eaten on a trip. And where was it?
Krispy Kreme donuts, obviously.
He would love that answer.
Yeah, he would. He would. I mean, listen, Krispy Kreme donuts, they're the best. They're so good. But anyways, the best thing I've eaten, I would have to say, is at Ballyhack, which is in Virginia, now part of the Dormy Club Network. And there was a steak and cheese sandwich that they served there. And it's probably, and I like me a steak and cheese sandwich as much as anybody. And that's probably the best one I've ever had. And I had that. And then for dinner that night, my good friend Scott Richards cooked me a steak dinner with potatoes roasted in duck fat. And Scott can cook. Let me just put it that way. Scott,
so
he can
but,
cook.
But is, since you're mentioning it here.
Yes.
Is Scott available for all of us to go have him cook a steak and
probably fat, shouldn't have mentioned that.
Yeah. Okay. That's You have to, again, Ben, as we talked about careful. Earlier.
Yes, you did. We careful. Did. All absolutely. Right.
Just quickly, I have not been to Ballyhack, but I have heard really cool things about it. I just saw a post about Ballyhack this morning, I think.
It's wild. It is fantastic. Probably the, in terms of course conditions, probably the best I've ever played. I mean, are right up there. Just pristine conditions. And it is, it's a Lester George design, and it's wild. I mean, it's just the greens. Some of them can get a little unfair just because of how fast they are, but hey, I like me some fast greens. So, but, yeah, I mean the whole course is just, it's fantastic. So much elevation and undulation, It's awesome. Love
cool.
It.
I'll put it on the list.
Yeah.
All right. Besides golf and people, which are the obvious ones, what's the most important thing to you when you go on a trip?
For me, I think it's the scenery or the landscape. You know, I like something cool to look at. You know, I'm reminded of our trip to Gamble and when I went to Vegas, the mountains in the backdrop, you know, the cool rock formations that you see, you know, even obviously all the coastal courses out there. I remember my first time I went to a course that was right there on the beach at Bay Creek in Virginia. That was almost a spiritual experience. So I love the overall environment and the feels that it gives you.
Cool. I would agree. I think that kind of makes sense to all of us. We're so lucky.
Yeah,
I keep thinking about it. Every time I'm out on a golf course, I just keep going. We are just so lucky. I love other sports, but I keep going. If I'm a tennis player, I could be playing, other than playing in Roland Garros or Wimbledon, it's a tennis court.
Yeah.
No matter where you are, it's a tennis court. That's all. Anyway. All right. Moving on. The one piece of golf apparel or equipment you can't live without.
I mean, don't have anything really specific. I do like my Adidas. I'm an Adidas guy when it comes to clothing, for the most part, for apparel. They make some really good stuff, and I like the way it looks. People always compliment me on me looking the part when I show up to the golf course, so that's nice. and then for equipment, you know, I'm still a Mizuno guy, but I also have a Ping G400 driver that's by far the best club that I have in my bag. Second best club I have in my bag, although, is a Mizuno. It's a hybrid, which you saw me hit out of a fairly deep fairway bunker at True Blue. And that is by far the most versatile club I've ever had. I've actually played an entire nine holes with just that club and shot like a
40. How did that go? You're kidding.
Not bad. Yeah. No,
great.
I went to one of those, like, you know, $15.
Now, is that a Mizuno hybrid?
Yeah, it's a Mizuno JPX easy hybrid. So it's the easy version, which means it's very forgiving. It's high launching, which allows me to get out of deep fairway bunkers, among other things.
That shot was sick.
And it wasn't even the best that I can do out of that bunker. But I mean, it's a great club, and I used it at Gamble Sands for those sort of low running shots up onto the green. So it's incredibly versatile club. It's what I love about it.
Cool. All right. Well, that sounds like you can't live without them.
Yeah.
That's why we asked that question.
There you go.
All right. So we're talking about golf, and I know you want to make these fun rounds now and everything. And with social media stuff and everything, as you said, it's not easy to always focus on your game.
Yeah.
But give us a general idea of where your game stands right now, your handicap, What tees, yardages do you like to play from? Are you willing to move around?
Yeah, I love, you know, if I'm playing, I've had home courses in the past, and when I have a home course, I do like to switch it up with the different tees, play from the tips, play up forward as well, make me feel like a pro with wedges and evergreen. but right now my handicap's just under 10. I just got it under 10. You know, during the winter, regardless of where I'm at, even in Virginia, I'll take a few months off just to let my body recuperate and have my mind focus on something other than golf. So usually early in the season, March, April, I'm 10 or 11 handicap, and then I get it down into the eights. I got as low as 7.8 last year. So, but ooh. I think 8 or 9 is kind of the sweet spot, because you don't have to practice that much and you can still go out and have fun and have memorable shots. So I think that's a nice place to be.
Okay, cool. I would kill to get back down to an 8 or 9 right now. So I'm glad it's easy for you, young whippersnapper. no, that's great. And it is. That's a perfect. See, what I like about people who write about the game is, and there are a lot of great golfers who are also great writers. I don't mean to take it away, but I think it's much easier, especially if you're doing golf advisor stuff, where you are, where you can, as a, let's say a 10 handicap, where you can go out and shoot 90,
yeah,
as well as you can go out and shoot 75 some days, but you have an understanding of all the range in there.
Yeah.
So I think that's perfect. All right. Who's the most interesting person you've ever golfed with? And because I'm the host of the show, you're not required to say me. I'm well, just saying.
It's hard for me to say someone don't, other than you.
Don't go there, Ben.
It's a slightly point of sourness with me, because I didn't get to play with David McKay Kidd when we played at Gamble Sands. Not sour about that at all, but he definitely would have been the most, because we got to do a Q&A afterwards, and he just totally blew my mind. But I will say, you know, it's, if I can for just a second, there's a moment that I had last year, playing with a Richmond City, police officer. And this was just a couple weeks after, an incident that happened in Richmond there with the protesters, obviously a lot of demonstrations and protests last year. And there was an incident that did not go well in Richmond for that police department. And I got paired up with him a couple of weeks after that and got to hear him kind of tell his view of things. And Mitch, as you know, one of the things I'm passionate about in golf and other things too, is kind of getting a whole picture on everything. And
right.
To be able to listen to him, kind of share his views on the whole situation and, you know, micro and macro, of everything that was going on, really gave me an appreciation for everything that you know, police officers do, but everything that also is going on in the country as well. So mm-hmm.
Was that just a random pairing?
Yeah. Yeah. I just happened to be paired up with him. And it was weird because the course was like an hour outside of Richmond. So it wasn't, you know, the chances of me actually getting paired up with somebody that was a police officer there in Richmond was, but yeah, I mean, it was awesome.
Well, as we know, when all of us talk about it, but the chance for connections is what it's about.
It really is. Absolutely.
And come at all different times and, you know, a lot of it. And you mentioned it, but I do know that as somebody who you and I have had different discussions about all kinds of different things, I have rarely met anyone who is as great as you are about wanting both sides.
Yeah.
About having definite opinions, but being willing to listen to people who don't have the same opinion. I really wish everybody could deal with it the way that you deal with it. It's a great quality.
Yeah. I mean, I think we'd all be better off if we did more listening and less talking, especially on social media these days.
Yeah. Tough to do though, when you have a podcast, because I have to talk sometimes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Getting to the end of this, we have a couple of bonus questions, but the one golf course that you wish everyone knew about.
Boiling this down to one is really tough. I'll give you a couple very quickly. Okay. Up here in New England, Owl's Nest is in my top 10. So it's a Nicholas Design course up in the White Mountains. Fantastic views. And the back nine, other than the 11th hole, is pretty much perfect. It is an unbelievably good back nine architecturally and just in terms of having fun. So I would say that. And then back in Virginia, Rock Harbor, which is an hour west of DC, which was built out of an old quarry, it's a little gimmicky, some people would say, but it is a blast and it's a lot of fun. So I would say those two courses, if you haven't heard of them and if you're anywhere near them, please go play them and let me know what you think.
Cool. Those are great recommendations. I always love it when really you go, wow, I literally never heard of that.
Yeah.
But that's good. All right. Bonus questions. This one's tough because one of our bonus questions is tell us your best golf story, the coolest, weirdest, craziest thing you've seen or done on a golf course. All right. If you have one, go for it, because I keep going back to, you know, where.
Yeah. So I'll give you two different ones real quick. The craziest thing I've seen on the golf course in terms of my own game was actually last year at Griever Cup 2. It wasn't during that specific event, but during that trip that I was on, I was playing at Wild Rock in Wisconsin, there just outside of Wisconsin Dells. And I was on like the 17th hole. I hit a tee shot that started left going left. And it, you know, the fairway was a normal fairway, like 30, 40 yards wide, whatever. And it slopes down as it goes down into the trees. And my ball disappeared like 10 yards into the trees. So I go down there looking for it just to see if it dropped straight down or if maybe it bounced out towards the edge. Couldn't find it. Ended up looking around for other people's golf balls. Everybody found their golf ball. And then I look up and I was like, hey, whose golf ball is this up here in the middle of the fairway? And it was mine. And I, to this day, I have beyond all comprehension how my golf ball ended up in the dead center of the fairway from that tee shot. It was just baffling. And then one cool thing I just learned yesterday, one of the participants for Griever Cup 3, Jason Gerdam, who I'm sharing a flight with down to Myrtle Beach, he was doing some research into his family history and discovered that his grandfather immigrated from Scotland and the ship that carried him to America was called the SS Caledonia. Kid you not.
Hello.
Okay, how cool is that?
What's his name?
Jason Gerdam. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing his name because we haven't actually met in person yet.
Okay. I'll try to find out what his name is because that's worth.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That's
so his
so
grandfather
cool.
came over on the Caledonia.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So you know you're going to have some stories to share with him.
Yes.
And you'll be there and you'll be sitting on the porch overlooking the 18th at Caledonia. I can just picture it now.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. All right. Really the last question, and this has really been fun, Ben. I knew it would be. The last question, and I followed your journey with this next question, and you've mentioned it a little bit.
Yeah.
It's ever evolving. What makes a you want to have fun when you play?
Yes.
So what makes a round fun or great in your mind, and are they the same thing?
They're not necessarily the same thing. I mean, I think most people would agree if you play well, it's easier to have fun. You know, it's when you're not playing well, it's easy to get frustrated. But for me, there's so many different aspects of a round of golf that you can focus in on to find the fun, whether it's the people that you're playing with, whether it's, you know, sometimes you just get that perfect weather. I remember a round last year at Breakfast Hill Golf Club here in New Hampshire. And you know, I played like 40 something courses last year. We mentioned some of the ones that I played, Erin Hills on top of that, Sand Valley, Mammoth Dunes. I mean, big time courses, lots of fantastic memories, but I played Breakfast Hill last year and it just, you know, it was 73 degrees, partly cloudy, no humidity, no bugs, perfect fall foliage. I mean, it was just a breathtakingly beautiful day. And that alone, it just made the round so much so enjoyable. It was fantastic. So things like that. It's the little things, really.
Oh, I love hearing that.
Yeah.
It's the little things. Can we quote you?
Sure. I'm not the first to say it, but it is.
No, I know, but to hear it is, it's really cool to hear it. That's the only thing I can say, because so many people forget that. I'm old. I try not to forget that every day, but a lot of people tend to overlook it. So I'm glad you brought it up. This has been a lot of fun, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
We're going to get to share some more fun a little bit. I'll see you when you're down here in Myrtle Beach. Reaver Cup 3 coming up again. You'll want to follow that if you're listening. Safe travels all around in New Hampshire and every place else. And Chris, any closing words for Ben?
No, man. It's just good to hear his voice again.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's been too long. And I'm gutted that I won't be at Griever Cup 3, but you can blame Mitch and Darren and Ryan for pulling me away.
It's all right. We're gonna post all over Twitter and make you guys jealous. It's fine. it goes both ways. So.
Yeah, and that whole blame thing, Chris. Forget it.
Yeah.
That's not happening. All right. Again,
I have to go play French Lick.
Yeah, I have to go play French. Well, we threw you a bone, man.
That's right.
Come on, let's be honest. All right, thanks again to Ben Green. Again, you can find him at Back9Ben on Twitter and Instagram. Highly suggest that you do. As always, of course, we thank the listeners. Couldn't do it without you. Keep listening. You can rate us on iTunes. Follow us on the social media at Golf Trip Experts and help us share the world of golf travel. Of course, thanks to our great producer, Chris McEwen, at Chris McEwen on Twitter and Instagram. I can't say enough times how glad we are to be doing some things with him. Golf Origin Stories, get on it. You'll start at the beginning and listen to every one. And all I can say is thanks again for listening. Ben has been a great guest. He's had a dream to connect with golfers, to enjoy the game and its experiences as fully as possible, and to spread the word on the best places you can visit, too. We hope you keep running down your dream as well. So long.